This is the Heartland Collegiate Compendium. Principles of Microeconomics. Lecture 12, delivered on July 3rd of 2008. The title of this lecture is Monopolistic Competition in the Short Run and the Long Run.
Today, monopolistic competition in the short run and the long run. The monopolistic competitor in the short run, just like a monopolist, will have excess capacity. It could produce more and thereby realize scale economies, but it will not, because if it produced more, it would have to lower its price because it's the monopolist. It's facing the full demand curve for its product. So if it put more into the market, its price would have to go down. So the monopolist always, and the monopolistic competitor in the short run, is going to produce less than it would in perfect competition. It's going to charge a higher price than it would in perfect competition. You see that here? Price will be higher and than it would be in perfect competition. Output would be lower than in perfect competition. Right there. I should put that right there. Now, the difference, though, is that a monopolist will stay there. But by the nature of monopolistic competition, there is no persistent, permanent barrier to entry. So we have here a situation where a company in monopolistic competition, looking just like a monopolist as far as cost curves and all that go, is going to realize a profit. Do you see this profit? This is its cost, total cost per unit right here, where the output level hits the average total cost curve. Make sure you note that. Make sure you note that. There are so many curves intersecting so many curves that it's hard to get used to where things are. But if I look at where this company is producing, this is the quantity of a monopolist or a monopolistic competitor in the short run. And it will be producing that because that's the profit maximizing point, because that's where marginal revenue equals marginal cost. But at that output level, we can now look at its entire cost structure. Just run this output level up. First, it hits average variable cost curve there. So that is its per unit variable cost of production, right there. Now we go up here, and let me try to get this line to come over here. And I'll mark this. At QM, this is average variable cost per unit, which is almost like, that's redundant. That's average, it's unit cost, okay? And that's variable. Now, if we go up further, we'll see, okay, right here, that point right there is at this output level QM. This is average total cost per unit. Okay, all we're doing is we're looking at all the different unit costs as we go up. This is where its variable cost of production are for that level of output. This is where it's all of its costs are per unit. Okay? Now, we go clear up to the demand curve. This is what the market will bear in terms of price at that low output level. So that means this is the price per unit they can charge for the product, because the market will pay that for it. This is the total cost per unit that the company is incurring at that level of output. That means that that would have to be the per unit profit. See that distance right there? That would have to be the per unit profit from this line and I'll designate that as AVC, oh, ATC of QM, writing it like function notation. And this would be price of at QM. So if I look at this, the profit at an output level of QM, and that's per unit profit, this is per unit, would be price they can charge at output level QM minus the average total cost at that level QM. Okay? That's a per unit. What I'm trying to do is I'm walking you through. They put these in the book, but there's almost something about drawing them and watching them as they're being drawn that sometimes helps, and just keep going back and explaining this is what this is, this is what this is, sometimes helps with these. Okay? This is their unit per unit profit at that level QM. Notice that that per unit profit would be different at different output levels. As I move along here, all these curves, you're moving along these curves, so these distances would be changing. That's why this is profit is actually going to be based upon the output level. Now here's the kicker, and they do these shaded parts in the book, and I'll explain this to you. It's actually just a geometry thing. Look, you see how this distance right here, this height right here, is the per unit profit at QM. This right here is the number of units that they're producing. So if I were to say the per unit profit times the number of units, that would be my total profit. So if I were to take this height right here times this width right here, I'd actually have a box. That would be the total profit they're making. That's why you'll see in the book and in a lot of other economics books, they will draw this like this box, that shaded region, profit per unit times the number of units equals total profit. So I can say the total output level times the profit per unit at that output level is total profit of the company. And as you can see, that area is actually a positive value. There is actually an area in there. This company's making a profit. It's making a profit per unit, and so if it produces some units, it's going to make some kind of total profit. Now, what I'm going to do here in just a minute is I'm going to draw this with some numbers in. I'm just going to put a few numbers in just to help a little bit see this. But that's why you see that shaded area in that one picture, in several pictures in the book. But what I'm trying to get to, I'm trying to get to a slightly subtler point. This one's going to be more difficult to show you. But I think the book explains something not quite correctly. If this were a monopolist, these curves would stay there permanently. That's what a monopolist is. It will not let competitors come in. There's something that keeps competitors out. But in monopolistic competition, the barbarians are at the gate. They're always there. And if you want to keep that demand curve downward sloping, you have to pour money into the product. You have to pour money into marketing, advertising, packaging, placement, promotions, all those kinds of things. You have to keep that demand curve downward sloping. You have to maintain the product differentiation. Okay, now let's talk about what would happen in the long run if the barbarians were actually at the gate. Remember what I said before, that if you have a product with perfect substitutes, what we call maybe a fungible good, like corn, rice, wheat, where there are perfect substitutes for it, milk maybe. Well, in a situation like that, the demand curve will be perfectly elastic. Because if you try to change the price of your brand, everyone just walks away.
if you try to raise your price. You're certainly not going to lower your price if you can charge $2 a gallon for milk. Yeah, those were the good old days. If you can charge $4 a gallon for milk, and there everyone else charges $4 a gallon for milk, if you try to jack your price of your milk up to $4.50, no one's going to buy it. I feel good about my customers. I'll drop my price down to $3. Well, you're stupid. Why would you do that? You can sell as much as you want, as much as your production can do at $4. Why the hell would you try to sell? Well, I'm trying to break the back of my competition. Well, that means you're trying to break the back of some 10 million dairy producers around the world. Good going. No. You see, the thing is that if a product has perfect substitutes, the demand facing the individual firm is going to be perfectly elastic. Perfectly elastic. Because at some prevailing price level. Because if you try to raise your price, you lose all, your demand's gone. If you try to lower your price, well, you're just wasting money. You're just giving up profit. So you'll charge what everyone else charges. That would be perfect competition. Well, let's see what would happen then to a monopolistic competitor as perfect competition begins to take hold. Suddenly, products just like yours are in the market. You're blowing money to try to keep your product differentiated. And it's just like you're wasting it because all these products are pouring into the market that are just like yours. You can't convince people anymore that your product is different because everyone else is trying to convince people the product, their product is different. You end up with 10,000 variations on brand X. So let's see what would happen here in this situation as this company suddenly starts to feel perfect competition weighing upon it. We're trying to draw everything just about the same as it was. Now, you see why competitors are coming in. There's profit. There's some son of a bitch out there who's going to want to take your profit away from you. I mean, that's the way the world works. Greed is all over the place. Don't let Barney convince you otherwise. Okay, now I'm going to draw in the cost curves and try to do them just like I have over there. There's your AVC, there's your ATC, but now something is becoming evident, is emerging. Your marginal cost curve, yes indeed, you have a marginal cost curve, just like you had before, but your marginal cost curve is no longer the industry supply curve. Because there are all of these other companies contributing their little marginal cost curves above average variable costs, above shutdown. And suddenly, there is an industry supply curve, so you are no longer the industry supply. There are other products on the shelves just like yours. So suddenly, there is a supply and a demand framework that you no longer are enjoying the benefits of. Several things are going to happen, and this is where there's a subtle difference between what I'm explaining and what the book is explaining. I strongly encourage you to read what the book is saying, but I've got a point to make here. The industry supply curve, several things are going to happen. The industry supply curve is going to suddenly start to go this way. Your marginal cost curve was a supply curve, but now your marginal cost curve is being added to by other companies coming in. And suddenly, there becomes an emergent total supply in the market that isn't just your marginal cost curve. So in a very real sense, this company that was in monopolistic competition, by making profits, signaled other companies, come in. It didn't mean to. Come in. But what that suddenly does is all this marginal cost curve which was the supply curve when you were the only one making your product, suddenly the shadow starts to show up. A real industry supply curve starts to build outward. A real industry supply curve starts to build outward. Now, there's still a demand for the market, but what's going to happen is all of a sudden, you are no longer the only big dog on the block. You are just one of many, and the supply curve emerges from your marginal cost curve. It emerges to the right, almost like you're turning this and this dimension starts to show up, a dimension of competition that you didn't have before. And all of a sudden, what looked like you were the marginal cost curve, supply curve of the industry, suddenly your marginal cost curve, which I have recreated over here, this is yours. But it's no longer the supply curve of the industry. The supply curve of the industry has other companies' marginal cost curves, building it outward. And so suddenly, there comes about a real supply curve of competition. And then that's when the perfect competition model begins to show up. You can no longer price based upon this marginal revenue because you are just one more company in the product line. And all of a sudden, notice what's happening to the price. You see how the price drops very quickly on the product. It actually begins to drop very quickly. And it begins, as this supply curve emerges, an industry supply curve, a real industry supply curve emerges, notice how the market price begins to respond downward. Your competitors are coming in and undercutting your price. One comes in, another comes in. One comes in, cuts to your price. Another one comes in, cuts your price. Another one comes in, cuts price. You're suddenly in a world where all of that great profit you were making, that monopoly price you were charging, it's not there anymore. You're having to price where every other hoe handle is pricing. And suddenly, you are no longer a price setter. You're a price taker. You're a price taker. No longer are you the only truck on the market, the Ford F-150. You've got, for God's sake, the Japanese are building trucks now, for God's sake. How degrading is that, driving around in a Toyota? Oh, yeah, I drive a Toyota truck. Oh, that's Butch, yeah. I shouldn't do that. This happens all the time, business after business, industry after industry. Well, yeah, there was only one bottled water back then. But all of a sudden, now everyone's figured out, oh, I can hold a bottle under the tap, turn it on, and sell it to suckers. That didn't take a whole lot of technological innovation, did it, Sparky? You see those cars on the road? Those little boxy things? The government should recall them for ugly. 2 years ago, there were only a few of them. It was fun. You could drive by and make fun of that. Does your mom address you too? Now there's so many of them, don't have time to make fun of all of them. Back in my day, only the really, really coolest kids in college had cell phones. They were the big ass things that you held like this up to your ear. Now you've got people on Market Street with cell phones, for God's sake. Used to be, it was kind of cool to do email and go HTTP and FTP and all that. Now you got grandma hears you got mail. God. You see what's happened? The price, as the supply curve of the industry emerged from what used to be just your supply curve, which was your marginal cost curve, the supply is pulling outward. And so what used to be, you saw the demand for your product, and that was the demand of the market. somewhere along the line, the demand for your product became nothing but the demand for brand X. This demand curve began to rotate. In your eyes, your demand curve, as you as the company, you, in a very real sense, began to see the demand for your product become more and more elastic. You had less and less, very quickly sometimes, you had less and less ability to set your own price. Because there were more and more products out there so much like yours that you had to respond to price instead of setting price. You had to take price. And that means that from your eyes, what happened was that your demand curve for your product almost snapped to flat. From a product, you had the world by the tail with your product. One day you wake up and, oh, we can sell as much as we want at the prevailing price. Yeah, everyone else is charging it, so we got to charge that too. Well, couldn't we market our way out of this? Hell, there comes a point where the price is so sucky on the product that it's not even worth trying to market your way out of it. At this point in the bottled water market, it's almost not worth it trying to sell your water, trying to spend hundreds of millions of dollars marketing your water. It's not worth it these days. Now, other companies obviously still try product differentiation with trucks. A great good example is Ford Trucks. They still try to keep that product differentiation there. It's a war. You just have to fight like that. And there comes a point where you just kind of give up. Mm. Some products, actually, interestingly enough, go through cycles, too. From an economics point of view, it's almost like they go from those demand curves like that, flat, and then they begin over a period of years to come back through the cycle. Great example of that was back in the late 70s, early 80s. These small, cheapo, ugly-ass cars got really hot, and there were only a few manufacturers of them. Japanese, yeah, with the Datsuns, but big in the United States were those Ford Escorts. Have you anyone ever seen one of those Ford Escorts from the 1980s? I mean, they were like death traps. They were like Volkswagens. You took a can opener with you, so if you had an accident, you could cut your way out. They just went, and then they went away. But then there was, with the gas prices the way they are, there was suddenly, there's a resurgence in the demand for that kind of car. Another example was the Volkswagen Beetle. Lived its part of its lifestyle. Hell, I had a Volkswagen Super Beetle. And lived its life cycle, died a merciful death, and now the damn thing is back. And it's still ugly as hell. I shouldn't be that way. Yes, they're a cute car. but you see what... Now, here's where I'm explaining this differently from how the book explains it. The book describes this in terms of the transition from the short run of a monopolistic competitor to the long run, in terms of the demand curve for your product sliding inward because of the competitors coming into the market, not as many people demand your product. That's really hiding, in my judgment, what's going on, the intermediate. It's not that your demand curve is sliding inward like this. From your perspective, your demand curve is actually, yeah, sliding, but it's also flattening. But it's not just because not as many people want your product, really. It's because competitive forces are pushing the supply curve out and you are becoming more and more a price taker. Which means that this demand curve that you used to have of your own is vanishing into a plain old perfect competition demand curve that any company would see. There's still a demand curve out there. There really is. But that demand curve is no longer yours and yours alone. This is the demand curve of the industry for the products like yours. But as more and more products like yours show up, they become more and more like perfect substitutes. So you no longer see the industry demand curve because you are no longer the industry. And so there's this critical role that the supply curve begins to play. Because not only do you no longer own the demand curve of the industry, you're sharing it. But you no longer own the supply curve of the industry. You're sharing that. And that's the critical point. It really isn't the case that perfect competition takes over and the price goes to here. It probably is a lot worse than that. In the long run, you would almost be grateful for the perfect competition solution. But it can't stay there. Let me show you why this could not be the final solution of the market. Look here. See this price right here? That would be the perfect competition price. Do you notice that at that output level, see there, right there, that perfect competition price? Do you notice how your average total costs are right there? You're still making a profit. Do you see it? If this is the perfect competition price, but your average total cost curve is right here at that output level, you would still be making a profit. That profit right there. And that time, that output level times that profit per unit right there, you'd still be making a profit. There would still be incentive to enter this industry. There'd still be incentive to enter this industry. Do you see that little subtle point right there? Let me try it again on you. You see how this is the perfect competition, the way we teach it, and I taught it to you last week or early this week, you know, where the supply curve equals the demand curve. It would be right there. That price, that output level. Certainly higher than monopoly output level and certainly lower than monopoly price. But if you really were producing that output level right there, at that output level, there's your average variable cost per unit. There's your average total cost per unit right across there. There's your price per unit. You've got profit still. If you've got profit, you've still got an incentive for competitors to enter the market. That's not going to be where this nightmare stops. You would actually be grateful to stop for the competition to stop coming in there because you'd still be making an economic profit. But if you're still making an economic profit, you're still signaling incentive to competitors to come in because there's abnormal profit to be made. Economic profit is an abnormal profit. So it is not going to stop there. It's going to keep pushing outward. Now, I took it way too far probably out to here, but I'm trying to overemphasize, kind of magnify this phenomenon. I took you really deep that time, guys. And I'll do another version of variation of this. This is one of those where sometimes I'll say, if you do a table in numbers, it'll all make better sense to you. Well, if I told you that, I would be lying like a mofo. Because if you did the table version of this, it would be, you would become Buddhist monks. You would go live in the mountains. Yeah, the table would show you the numbers happening, but it would still, I mean, it would just fog you. Really, the best way to do this is just to show it to you more than once. Just keep pointing out the hallmark places, how we do this with the output level. Notice how I'm always using output level to determine costs, variable cost per unit, total cost per unit, price per unit. It's always that output level that you use to drive your analysis. So the very first thing you always do is look at where marginal revenue equals marginal cost. That tells you what your profit maximizing output level is. Then from there, everything proceeds. You look up from there to find your costs and your price. And that's one of the things that I've brought up before. Whenever you're drawing one of these things like this, demand, there's your marginal revenue, there's your marginal cost curve. The almost always you'll get it right when you say, okay, well, we look where marginal revenue equals marginal cost, okay? You locate that point. But then from there, the first thing you always do is just drop down and get your output level right there. And then forget about that point. Forget about that dot you drew there at the beginning. Forget about it. Because all that was done for was to find where your output, your best output level is to make the most money. Get rid of that. Because at that point, once you have used that intersection of marginal cost and marginal revenue, then don't worry about that one anymore. It really doesn't mean anything after it is told you where you should produce. From there, the way I used to do it, and I kind of went overboard, I always heard something I care about doing that. I just draw a damn line straight up. I just draw a straight up line, and I say, okay, now let's see where this hits the average variable cost curve. Let's see where this vertical line hits the average total cost curve. Let's see where this vertical line hits the demand curve. That's how you do it. Don't ever worry about that place again where the two cross to get you started. That was just your starting point.
Unless that'll be like a monopoly.
Well, or a monopolistic competitor in the short run. Okay. Yeah, either way, either one. Yeah. So if I were to take this like this, let me get all of this off the board here for just a minute, and I'm just going to really quickly just run one of these through like this. Watch. I'm just going to say, all right. Here's the demand curve, and remember the marginal revenue curve, if we're doing monopolies or monopolistic competition in the short run, it hooks there at output level one, and then it's about halfway in, the marginal revenue curve will be, okay? And then I've shown you, okay, here's your marginal cost curve, here is your average, let me do one like this, average variable cost. And here is your actually, mathematically, these have to have a certain relationship. Do you see how I always have to bust my butt to get that those two cost curves to look right? Because the average variable cost curve and the average total cost curve have to always converge at high output levels because your unit fixed costs are becoming trivial. But I also always have to make sure that these average curves hit at their bottoms the marginal cost curve. That's just because less than the average, it's pulling the average down. Whenever the last is greater than the average, it's pulling the average up. So that's why these two minimums have to be this way. So you always have to be that. Okay, now I've said, all right, here's your damn dinner. Here's your damn dinner. And I said, show me where your profit is. Okay. Step one, I've got to figure out where this company is going to be producing. Profit maximization is always where marginal revenue equals marginal cost. Always. So that's right there. That's right there. Okay? Once I've located that point, all I need to do is get down to see the output level that was associated with it. Right there. There's my profit maximizing output level. And I'll put QM, the quantity a monopolist produces. After I've done that, that little dotty right there that I drew, you know what I mean, where those two crossed each other, the marginal revenue, the marginal cost, I can forget about that place. That's done. That's died. It went home to be with Jesus. Now we're going to go from there, and we're just going to draw this, if I could have drawn that. Do I have astigmatism? Why do I always draw these curves? I'm going to take this output level, and I'm just going to draw a straight up line all the way up to heaven. Well, not that far. I mean, you know, you got to stop sometime. Excuse me. I always look so weird on the audio profile when I do that. Yes.
Now, you mentioned that could be, if it's short run, it could be
It would be a monopolistic competitor, because a monopolistic competitor looks just like a monopoly in the short run, because it is the only producer of its thing, its product. So this could be either a monopoly or a monopolistic. Okay, now I've drawn this. Okay, there's your damn dinner right there. Okay. Okay, now what I'm going to do is I can just walk along this output level. At that output level right there, I'm going to look up, okay, what's my unit variable cost? It would be right there. There's my unit variable cost, and I'll write that as AVC at QM, using that function notation. That doesn't mean times, it just means at that output level. Okay, there's my unit variable cost. Work my way up the grinder. Oh, right there. There is my average total cost at that output level. You see, all I'm doing is I'm just looking at where the QM hits the different curves. And okay, well, we keep going up. What is the market going to bear in terms of a price for the product if this is all they're seeing in the market? Well, that would be right there. That's the demand curve. At that output supply, you know, demand, quantity demanded is right there. And so I will put the price at QM right there. Notice how once I had located that QM, that was what drove everything. I just ran it up. Oh, at that output level, there's what it's going to pay in variable cost per unit. There's what it will pay in all of its cost per unit. And there's what it's going to charge for its. Now, just a simple question here. Is this company making an economic profit here? Yeah, if you're nodding your head, yeah, you're right. It is. Because its price on each unit is above its total costs on each unit. And in fact, I can even see, okay, its profit per unit is going to be the P of QM less ATC of QM. Like that. Now that's its per unit. Now if I wanted to find out what its actual total, what it would see in terms of a managerial analysis, how much total money it's pulling profit wise, I could say actually, well, I'm going to do this. And again, this is one of the things that might have to do it a couple of times. Do you see that this box that goes from 0 to QM and goes all the way from the 0 all the way up to PQM, that's its total revenue. Do you see that? You got this look on your head. No, but if you hum a few bars, maybe I can pick it up when we get to the chorus. Look. This is how much it's charging for each unit, this price right here. Let's say that's $10. This is how much it's producing. Let's say 100 units. So if I took $10 per unit times 100 units, is that what I do? Yeah. I'd have $1,000. That's its total revenue. This big box that captures the P of QM over to QM, that's its total revenue at that output level. So I could actually write total revenue at output level, and I'm always going to write this function notation like that, is going to be the price per unit at output level QM times QM. Like that. That's its total revenue. Now, there's a bonus in here. Woman, could you tell me, you see how I got total revenue? Could you tell me how I would calculate total cost at that output level QM? What box would that be? Well, that would be its per unit cost at that output level. That would be its cost per unit at that output level, from there to there. How many units is it producing? Let's say that that's $8 in total cost per unit. How many units did I say it was making? So in order to get, so what would be the total cost? How did you do that?
Multiply.
Multiply what?
Multiply the units.
You're almost whining about it. Well, you multiply the units, man. Get off me. So you're saying that total cost at output level M is ATC of QM times QM. So if I were to just take these boxes out of there, and I'm just drawing these out here, that QM times P of QM is total revenue. Now let me draw inside of that. ATC of QM times QM would be that box right there. You follow me? So if I take this area minus this area, if I were to take P of QM times QM minus ATC of QM times QM, I would get this area right here. That's your profit. That's why I was drawing that. It's like a geometry exercise. The only nasty part of this geometry exercise is that, how do I put this? It's a nonlinear geometry. It works with it's just boxes. That's all it is. Areas of boxes. Really. But those areas of those boxes change in weird ways as your output level changes because the areas are opening and closing nonlinearly because of the shapes of these curves. But don't worry too much about that. So in other words, if I were to go back here and simply write, the monopoly output was 100 units. Put some real numbers on it. The average total cost at that output level was $8 per unit. And the price that I was charging was $10 per unit. Well, the area of the big box, that big blue box, would have been $10 per unit times 100 units. And if I subtract off the area of the small box, the smaller box, $8 per unit, well, let me just take that off there, times the 100 units, I would get my total revenue, the big box, minus my total costs, this box right here. And that would leave me with the small box, which would be my economic profit. Now, the reason I'm doing this is, aside from the fact that this is really great when everyone's drunk at a party, you can show them this stuff and they'll actually be impressed by it. Once you've done this a few times, it actually gets down deep inside you. It really does. The one thing that I finally concluded after years of teaching this economic stuff is just throwing those curves up. There's your damn curves. Have a look at them. Here, there's some of the goddamn curves in the book, too. Enjoy them. Yeah, read them while you're on the toilet. It doesn't do a whole lot of good. It just kind of goes by almost anyone. If those make sense to you first time you see them, get help. But if I keep doing these over and over, a little bit more of a sense of this begins to sink in. And it actually begins to sink in almost a business kind of way. Because notice what's going to happen here. As this company, if this is a monopolistic competitor, the barbarians are at the gate. Sooner or later, it's going to be facing more and more competition. And that means that it's going to be more and more just like a perfect competitor. It's going to have to sell more of its product It's going to have to start using that capacity it had before. So what's going to happen is, as these curves, this QM is going to move out towards perfect competition, and as I said, probably beyond that. What's going to happen is, notice that you're going to see this QM going out. Notice how your unit costs are going to start to fall. It's going to get cheaper and cheaper. Well, we no longer use precious special methods to make ours. We just get it on the assembly line, get it off! That's what will happen. You'll stop. You know, we have, with these products where, yes, our product is made in environmentally friendly, clean facilities with happy-go-lucky workers and all that. No, we're just going to get it into a damn factory and crank it out, and then here's your damn product, buy it. As you produce more, you're going to start getting efficient, more efficient. Because you'll have to. You're going to have to get more out on the shelves. Because everyone else is getting theirs out on the shelves, you got to get yours out on the shelves. So this is going to start to come outward. As your output level starts to go outward, you're going to start realizing, oh, I can produce more. I can produce each unit more cheaply because these are unit curves, units. Well, what that's also going to do is, well, shit, we got to drop the price here. Everyone else is dropping the price. So what's going to happen is that these boxes, see your average variable cost box and your average total cost box? See how those will actually begin to widen out and shrink somewhat. You'll begin to see your cost structure actually changing as you go from a monopolistic competitor, to a perfect competitor. Our cost structures seem to be changing. Well, no, they're not really your cost structures changing. You're just beginning to realize places on your existing cost curves you never saw before because you never produced this much before. Now you have to produce more. You're seeing places you never knew you had on the existing factory equipment that was there. So, and then also though, your price is sliding too. And notice what's something that's going to happen. See how, as the price begins to slide downward, see how this box, this little blue area, see how it begins to narrow? That's you losing your economic profit. That's the barbarians coming to the gate and making it so that you have to live like a normal person instead of Bill Gates. Take a break. And we are back. On Tuesday, I am going to surprise you with a quiz, okay? No, I decided I'm going to do this on Tuesday because by Wednesday you will have forgotten. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you what the quiz will be. I'm going to put a grid with actual numbers. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. And I'm going to lay the cost curves, demand curve, and marginal revenue curve on it. And the quiz, I'm just going to ask you, what's the monopoly price, or the monopolistic competition in the short run price? And what is the unit total cost? What is the unit variable cost? What are their total costs overall? What is their total revenue overall? And what's their profit? I'm just going to put a grid with actual numbers on it. And if you know what you're doing, it should take you no more than like a couple of minutes. But you need to bring a ruler with you so that you can actually draw the line. Remember, it's all driven by finding the output level. It's all driven by finding the output level. Once you have located that by finding marginal revenue, marginal cost, and then you just draw a vertical line, and then you just note, there. And then you can do it. It is actually, if you know what you're doing, and you don't make it too much work, this is really easy. And I'll also ask you, where in theory would be the perfect competition level? And that would just be there. Although we, as I've told you, in reality, that marginal cost curve, a real supply curve, will emerge and come outward from it. It won't go out forever. Because there's going to be a point where everyone's losing money, and then you'll have companies falling by the wayside. In the long run, in perfect competition and in monopolistic competition, essentially the long run dynamic is that there would be a place where zero economic profits were being made. So if I were looking at these, interestingly enough, in the long run, if this were the typical look of the competitors as the Bavarians came to the gate, barbarians came to the gate. Yeah, Bavarians. Sir, there are people with lederhosen at the gate. Oh, God. As the barbarians came to the gate, eventually what would probably happen is that the supply curve would get out far enough to wipe out any economic cost, which would mean that ultimately you'd probably be at the bottom of an average total cost curve, a typical average total cost curve of the industry. Now, that does not mean that every company would make zero economic profit. There might be competitors who have a little bit of special technology that might still be able to eke out a little bit of economic profit. But economic losses would drive companies out of the industry in the long run. So there would be a tendency for the supply curve and the demand curve to finally settle somewhere around this bottoming out point here. But for the quiz purposes, all you have to do is find the monopolistic output level, just draw the vertical line. Well, that would be the variable cost per unit. That would be the total cost per unit. That would be the price per unit. Well, total revenue would be the price per unit times the output level per unit. Your cost, total cost, would be the cost per unit, total cost per unit times the output level. So the profit would be the total, this little box here, total revenue minus total cost. That's all you have to do for this quiz that I'm going to give you on Tuesday. That's all there is to it. You'll just have a grid, and all you'll do is just write down the numbers that you see. You'll have to do a calculation, obviously, of the rev totals on it. But that's all there is to this problem. But boy, when you first see these graphs in a book, or even when they're usually just thrown up on a board, it's just like a maze. If you look at this, I mean, if you didn't know what I was talking about, which you probably still don't very well, but if you didn't know what I was talking about, this looks like gobbledygook. That is all I had to say upon that subject. Now, I want to bring up, the book talks about game theory. Now, I have, over the years, stepped away from game theory a lot. I think as I took grad level math courses in game theory, it's marvelously interesting subject matter, but it also gets into some stuff that has all kinds of complications and nuances to it. I'm just going to toss out the concept of game theory to you, just to get you used to it. But I will certainly not do any heavy duty testing on payoff matrices and all that kind of stuff. But allow me to just show you the idea of game theory with a famous problem called the prisoner's dilemma, and then explain what that has to do with economics. The whole idea of game theory, well, there are some situations where this is not the case, but the whole idea behind game theory is to prove to you that everyone in the universe except for you is an asshole. That's the whole point of game theory. Now, if that has not occurred to you yet in your life, then you haven't lived enough life. Now, you are obviously working for the good of mankind and all of that. But everyone else in this universe is a greedy, dirty, rotten, backstabbing son of a bitch. Let me explain. Woman, you and I have committed a crime together. Well, we have an agreement. You and I have worked this out. Look, If they catch us, they're going to put us into separate rooms and try to get us to rat on each other. Okay? Now, we got to make an agreement here. We're not going to do that. Okay? Because we know that if we both keep our pie holes shut, then we're going to get off. Okay? So, let's say your name is Molly, and my name is Al. Okay, here's Molly up here, and here's Al right here. And sure enough, those dirty, rotten coppers caught us. And so here we are in separate rooms, and the Law and Order TV cameras are right there recording the action. Scene opens. Fade from black. Law and Order music. Dum dum. Now Molly can choose not to confess, or she can choose to be a dirty, rotten rat and confess. Now, I could choose not to confess, or I could be a dirty, rotten rat and confess. Okay, now, we'll do it like this. Molly is going to be, I'll write Molly in blue, and I'll write Al in green. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at the payoff matrix. And I'm going to draw a diagonal line in each of these four boxes that I've done in this grid. Okay? Now, if Molly does not confess and I do not confess, then we each get 0 years in prison. Now, if Molly confesses and I refuse to confess, then Molly's going to get 1 year in prison and I am going to get to be the wife of Bubba for 10 years. On the other hand, let me write these. I was going to do these in green. Okay, so I will do my side in green. Now, if Molly chooses not to confess, but I choose to confess, I get 1 year, and Molly gets to be bunkmates with Large Marge for 10 years. Okay? But if we both confess, we both get 10 years. There you go. Now, this is what is called a payoff matrix. And I want you to think about what's going to happen when you're all by yourself with your interrogator in that room. And there you are. He's going to tell you whatever he has to. Al's over there in that other room, and he's breaking right now. They're holding a chocolate bar in front of him and telling him if he rats, he can have his chocolate bar. He's about to confess. I mean, if you confess before he does, you get only 1 year. And then we just drag him away. So what do you say? You think he's really, really going to hold out? They're doing the same thing to me. What's your best bet here?
For both of us?
No. That's just it. You look around that room. There's an interrogator and there's you. But I'm not there.
For me, it would be to confess.
Yes. Now, are you going to think about me when you're all alone in that room? Oh, no. No. You see, this is the degenerate solution. It is almost definitely going to be what happens. Because you are in this world for yourself. You're not in this world for me. You've got to assume the first rule of warfare. Never assume your opponent's intentions, only his capabilities. That is the rock-solid law, first rule of warfare. It was the first rule that I was taught by one of the best game theorists on Earth. It is the first rule when you are in business. It's the first rule you apply in economics. You never assume my intentions. You assume what I am capable of doing. Okay? What am I capable of doing here? I'm capable of ratting on you. It doesn't matter what my intentions are, because you can't tell my intentions. You really can't. You can't read my mind. But you can surely look at this payoff matrix and know what I'm capable of doing. I am capable of confessing. And under that, minimizing your maximum damage scenario, which is what game theory is all about, minimizing maximum damage, you have no question whatsoever that you're going to confess. No doubt whatsoever that you're going to confess. You and I are in a competition against each other, but I'm going to call you on the phone here. You woman, listen to me. Okay. You lower your price tomorrow morning down to $5. Okay? Oh, no. Let's not lower our price. Let's jack our prices up. Okay, tomorrow morning, you jack your price up. We're both at $10 now. Tell you what, you jack your price up to $20, and I'll jack my price up to $20. But I'll do mine just exactly 30 minutes later, so it won't look like we're colluding. Okay, so go ahead and jack your price up tomorrow morning. I'm good for it. Well, there. What are you going to do tomorrow morning? You're not going to give Jack shit on that. The reason is because I'll just sit there. Hey, everybody, look what she did to our prize. Ha, ha, ha. Sure. Didn't you believe me? I'm good for it, man. Really? I'm good for it. That's what game theory is all about. It's about love. Is about trusting your fellow man. If you take a somewhat higher powered micro course from me, you'll see me talking about game theory again. And also in macro, I tend to write about game theory and talk about it, because in the world of competitors like we have, you can either trust the other nations of the world, or, as the late President Ronald Reagan said, you can trust but verify what your competitor is doing. We did not do that with the country called China. And they kept their price, they kept their currency manipulated at about a third of its actual value for the last more than a decade. And by doing that, and by us believing that it was just some temporary thing, they wiped out millions, tens of millions of American jobs and put us into a shithole, because we believed their intentions. They're free market now. They're not communists, instead of their capability, which was to suck us dry. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.